What do you think is different that you bring than what you've seen on from other performances?
So this may sound a little strange, but I feel like she has a little bit of Tina Turner in her. So that's kind of what I've been bringing to her.
This is Preble Hall. Welcome to Preble Hall, a podcast about naval history from the United States Naval Academy Museum in Annapolis.
Welcome back to another episode of the Preble Hall Naval History Podcast, and this is a special podcast because we are going to be covering the Masqueraders, the oldest extracurricular activity here at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. We've got four midshipmen who are going to be performing some of their roles for an upcoming play performance tomorrow night, I think, right? Is it just tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night and Saturday night.
Tomorrow and Saturday night. And you're not performing in Mahan Hall, which you normally do. Where are you going to perform?
It's a very special year this year. We're going to be performing right outside the E-Course over at the NSA across the river.
That's fantastic. What an incredible venue you have. So with us today, Tierra Sterling. Welcome, Tierra. Where are you from?
Thank you. I'm originally from Chicago.
Welcome. And you're prior enlisted?
Yes. Enlisted aviation electronics technician.
Good. And you're second class?
Second class, yes.
All right. What are you majoring in?
I'm majoring in political science and I'm minoring in French.
Excellent. Well, très bien. And Alan?
Good morning.
Welcome. And I know you. So for those of you who saw the video of the Battle of Drepana last year, which was a simulation of a Carthaginian-Roman naval battle that we did with Professor Kelsey Sagstetter, and she was on our second or third episode. And Alan commanded one of the sides, and it was just a phenomenal day to watch this unfold and watch you all apply what you learned in class. So thank you for doing that, Alan.
Hey, thank you. It's always a pleasure to help out the history department.
And tell us where you're from.
I'm from Bismarck, North Dakota.
Welcome. And you're prior as well, right?
I am, yes. I was a Marine cryptologic linguist, and they taught me Spanish, and I used that.
Excellent. Are you majoring in Spanish then here?
No, I'm majoring in history, and I'm minoring in Spanish.
Tierra, is this your first performance with the Masqueraders?
Yes, this is my first one with the Masqueraders. For the past 2 years, I've done the Winter Musical. So,
what made you join the Masqueraders for this performance?
Well, we didn't do anything this year with the Winter Musical, but acting is something that I absolutely enjoy, being able to put on a performance, bring joy to people. So I'm like, I have to get my dosage for the year. So I'm like, I have to do it. I have no choice.
Alan, how long have you been with the Masqueraders?
I've been married to the Masqueraders since plebe year, and there was just no option. I absolutely had to be involved with this year's production, especially with it being my last chance to do it. Last semester, In light of the early stages of COVID protocol, we tried to set something up, and it just couldn't happen. But Dr. Stanley and I fought like hell to make this happen, and by the grace of God, it's going to. So,
what were your previous performances?
Oh man,
okay, it goes all the way back
Well,
back.
I mean, machine. It's not that far. I mean, so I did. I mean, I did a little stuff in high school, similar to Tierra, but really, I did. Plebe year, we did Infinite Wrench, followed by a few other shows. Youngster, and second class year, I believe it was Endgame for Youngster year and Proof for second class year. Good. Both very fun.
Tierra, tell us about your character.
So my character, Titania, is a fairy queen. She's married to Oberon, and they're having a lover's quarrel in the moment. Not the biggest fan of one another. She has this child from a friend that passed away. Oberon's not the biggest fan of that. She really rides her own wave. We can tell that she's the one that's in control in the marriage, even though Oberon likes to pretend as though he is. And, you know, they go back and forth, and he eventually, like, plays a prank on her. She falls in love with this creature. And it's no holds bars. It's absolutely, I want this individual, I'm going to have him. And I feel like that's how she is about everything in the world. What Titania says goes, and she's such a powerful character that I have had the time of my life being this person, because she has so many different dimensions. You know, we see the power, we see the strength, but we also see the vulnerability when she has this baby, when she's with her fairies, who's like her little entourage, but I feel like she treats them better than most would treat an entourage. And then we also see her get love struck by this creature. And, you know, she's very very lusty afterwards. And I also have moments where she can be very funny. So I've been able to play with a lot of different dimensions when it comes to building a character. So it's been absolutely incredible.
How did you learn about the character?
So when I heard about the show, I definitely did some research. And I originally went for Helena, who's one of the lovers and amongst the four. And then when I read for Titania, I'm like, oh, wait, there's also something here. So after that first audition, I went back and I looked into her character as well. And then I'm like, oh, it's probably a little bit more here to play with. I love just doing as much as I possibly can, bringing maybe something different to a character. Like, I like to look at what other people have done. So it was a lot of YouTube as well, a lot of research, seeing how other people have brought this character to life. And then I thought, well, what could I possibly do with it? So that's how I kind of created the character.
What do you think is different that you bring than what you've seen from other performances?
So this may sound a little strange, but I feel like she has a little bit of Tina Turner in her. So that's kind of what I've been bringing to her. Definitely powerful. You know, I found this stick during one of our rehearsals and I said, yep, this is mine. And it's a stick that's larger than myself. And I was like, I have to decorate this. And in every scene, I find a way to incorporate this shaft that I feel just makes me larger than life. Definitely playing up every moment for comedy. I feel like that's also something that I've done a little different. Other scenes that I've seen that people have done, they're very straightforward with it. It's like, oh, this is a powerful character. She's in control. And I don't really see too much, you know, comedic time and too much humanity, I would say, even though she's probably not really human. But I try to bring a little bit of everyone to her. You know, I want her to be a character that other people can see themselves in, mm-hmm. whether it's someone who's very strong and in control or someone who is a little more vulnerable, someone who is a little more comical.
Alan, tell us about Oberon.
So let's imagine for a moment the word pettiness. Let's take a moment and think about the word pettiness. And then let us form that word into a personage of some sort. Oberon, much like Titania, well, I mean, exactly like Titania, he's a god of the forest, the king of the wood. He's a petty man. Well, I say man, actually. You know, I tried out for Lysander first. Similar to T wanting a lover, I wanted a lover as well. But, you know, what made me want this character was the first audition that I had with her. Just the gravity and the power she was able to bring to the stage when we had that first interaction.
It was a really good reading.
It was really good. I had to tell her afterwards, like, I loved your energy there on stage. I had to let her know. It was just such a good time. And that's what's made me really like this character, is just forced association. And so Oberon is, I mean, similar to his story, it mirrors that of Titania. He wants this Indian boy, a changeling that can turn into anything that he wants. Or anything that the child desires to be, and he wants that kid so bad that he's willing to make his wife, who he's having a squabble with, fall in love with a man with a donkey's head. So it really is ridiculous. The more you understand what Shakespeare is writing, well, I mean, I have to get a bunch of translations. Thank God they have those in the script. But the more I read it, the more I understand just how ridiculous it is. And how much of a spectacle the show really is.
Was this the first time you've ever read through or seen Shakespeare?
No. My only other experience with Shakespeare, and I keep telling people this, I don't think they believe me at this point, was actually another recreation of the show on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody when I was like 8 years old. So
it's a good episode.
It was a good episode, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, so this is my real first dive into Shakespeare, and it's been wonderful.
See, now, when I think of Midsummer Night's Dream, this is before you were born, but there was a Robin Williams movie called The Dead Poets Society, and they're performing. In fact, one of the students he has, it wants to be Puck, and there's a tragic end to, unfortunately for the student, and leads to the end of the movie. That's very unfortunate, but that's the performance in Dead Poets Society, so... Was this the first time for you, for Tiara, for Shakespeare?
Reading and performing Shakespeare, yes, but I did a semester of college at the University of Minnesota right out of high school, and I went to see an interpretation of Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. It was not the stage performance. It wasn't with the grand costuming that you would expect. It was in a gymnasium in like a circle where the characters were moving in and out. They were very modern dressed. And it was incredible. I actually understood it, the way they performed it. Normally with Shakespeare, you need a million and one translations. But the way they performed it, I was like, oh, I get what he's saying. It was incredible. And that was the only experience that I had with Shakespeare until now. Back in high school, we did more James Baldwin, August Wilson, more along those lines. And then being here, I did the winter musicals. So yeah, this is my first time taking a stab at Shakespeare.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. And why don't we start with the reading then?
All right.
And do you want to set it up? What is going on in this particular scene?
So the scene is the first interaction between the two characters. Mm-hmm. They're in the middle of their little squabble. They're to make sense of what is about to be said, because I most certainly needed the translation as well. The million and one is... Mm-hmm. They both know they cheat on each other. They both know that, but they're both pointing it out and trying to make the other one jealous about it, and also trying to discuss the terms of getting the changeling. Okay. Is that good?
That's good.
Okay.
All right.
T. Sounds good. I'll give you the cue. Ill met by moonlight, proud Titania.
What, jealous Oberon? Fairy, skip hence. I have forsworn his bed and company.
Oh, Terry, rash wanton. Am not I thy lord?
Then I must be thy lady. But I know when thou hast stolen away from fairyland, and in the shape of Corin, sat all day playing on pipes of corn and versing love to amorous Phillida. Why art thou here? Come from the farthest steppe of India, but that, forsooth, the bouncing Amazon, your buskin mistress and your warrior love to Theseus must be wedded. And you come to give their bed joy and prosperity?
Oh, how canst thou thus? For shame, Titania. Glance at my credit with Hippolyta, knowing I know thy love to Theseus. Didst not thou lead him through the glimmering night from Paragona, whom he ravished?
Oh, these are the forgeries of jealousy. And never, since the middle summer spring, met we on hill and dale, forest or mead. But with thy brawls thou hast disturbed our sport. Therefore the winds, piping to us in vain, as in revenge, have sucked up from the sea contagious fogs, which, falling in the land, hath every pelting river made so proud that they have overborne their continents. The ox hath therefore stretched his yoke in vain, the ploughman lost his sweat, and the green corn hath rotted ere his youth attained a beard. The fold stands empty in a drowned field, and crows are fatted with the Murian flock. Therefore the moon, the governess of floods, pale in her anger, washes all the air, that rheumatic diseases do abound. And through this distemperature we see the seasons alter. Hoary-headed frosts fall fresh in the lap of the crimson rose, and on Ornheim's thin and icy crown, an odorous chaplet of sweet summer buds is, as in mockery, set. The spring... The summer, chowding autumn, angry winter change their wonted liveries, and the mazed world, by their increase, now knows not which is which. And the same progeny of evils comes from our debate, from our dissension. We are their parents and original.
Do you amend it, then? It lies in you. Why should Titania cross her Oberon? I do but beg a little changeling boy to be my henchman.
Set your heart at rest. The fairy land buys not the child of me. His mother was a votress of my order. Full often hath she gossiped by my side and sat with me on Neptune's yellow sands, marking the embarked traders on the flood. When we have laughed to see the sails conceive and grow big-bellied with the wanton wind, which she, with pretty and with swimming gait following, her womb then rich with my young squire, would imitate, and sail upon the land to fetch me trifles, and return again as from a voyage rich with merchandise. But she, being mortal, of that boy did die, And for her sake do I rear up her boy. And for her sake, I will not part with him.
How long within this wood intend you stay?
Perchance till after Theseus's wedding day. If you will patiently dance in our round and see our moonlight revels, go with us. If not, shun me, and I will spare your haunts.
Give me that boy, and I will go with thee.
Not for thy fairy kingdom. Fairies away! We shall chide downright if I longer stay.
Well, go thy way. Thou shalt not from this grove till I torment thee for this injury.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you.
You guys are going to wow all the people going over there tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
I'm really looking forward to it. Alan and Tiara, thank you so much for coming in and reading and telling us about these characters. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I have to ask, would you guys do one more reading?
Absolutely.
All right. Tell me about the scene that you're going to read.
So... So I am lying with a donkey. We've had relations multiple times at this point. And it's at the point now where Oberon, he's gotten the child. He's pretty much won the battle. But he almost takes pity on me because he's like, oh, man, she is really in love with this creature. All I wanted was the child. As much as I've enjoyed it, it's also kind of sick. So now we can actually move forward. We can fix things. I'll take the spell off of her, and then we'll move forward. We'll restore peace and love and harmony to the forest and all the land. But this has gone too far at this point.
Okay.
So.
But it's way funny. But it's been so funny. Okay. Welcome, good Robin. Seest thou this sweet sight? Her dotage now I do begin to pity. For meeting her of late behind the wood, seeking sweet favors for this hateful fool, I did upbraid her and fall out with her. For she as hairy temples then had rounded with coronet of fresh and fragrant flowers. When I had my pleasure taunted her, and she in mild terms begged my patience, I then did ask of her her changeling child, which straight she gave me, and her fairy sent to bear him to my bower in Fairyland. And now I have the boy. I will undo this hateful imperfection of her eyes, and, gentle Puck, take this transformed scalp from off the head of this Athenian swain. Then he, awakening when the other do, may all to Athens back again repair, and think no more of this night's accidents, but as the fierce vexation of a dream. But first I will release the fairy queen. Be as thou wast wont to be, see as thou wont to see. Dian's bud or Cupid's flower hath such force and blessed power. Now, my Titania, wake you, my sweet queen.
My Oberon, what visions have I seen? Methought I was enamored of an ass.
There lies your love.
What? How came these things to pass? Oh, how mine eyes do loathe this visage now.
Silence a while. Robin, take off this head. Titania, music, call, and strike more dead than common sleep of all these five the sense.
Music, oh music, such as charmeth sleep.
Sound music. Come, my queen, take hands with me, and rock the ground whereupon these sleepers be. Now thou and I are new in amity, and we'll tomorrow midnight solemnly dance in Duke Theseus' house triumphantly, and bless it to all fair prosperity. There shall the pairs of faithful lovers be, wedded with Theseus, all in jollity. Ah, then, my queen, in silence sad, tripped we after nightshade. We the globe can compass soon, swifter than the wandering moon.
Come, my lord, and in our flight, tell me how it came this night that I, sleeping here, was found with these mortals on the ground.
And of course I'll deny the entire thing.
I know you had something to do with it.
Sweetheart, I promise.
Thanks. And joining us before we meet with the next midshipman team is Professor Christy Stanlake of the English Department, who is the head of the Masqueraders. Professor Stanlake, welcome to Preble Hall.
Thank you so much for having all of us today and promoting the play and the program.
Absolutely. And again, I want to remind folks that the play is being performed tomorrow night and Saturday night.
Yes, at 7 p.m. on Rattel Hill, which is over at Naval Support Activities Annapolis. And it's a space that people aren't familiar with unless they're thinking about the e-course, mm-hmm. if they're former midshipmen.
And it's near the campground. It's over on the right-hand side.
And it's
side.
Right by the campground. So yeah. If you just enter the main street and keep going straight, don't turn until you see the two huge anchors, you're there.
Okay. This is the first time that masqueraders have performed outside of Mahan Hall, probably, right?
Well, I think the first time that we've performed outdoors.
Yeah.
And Mahan masqueraders had a spotty record until 1907 when it became official. Mm-hmm. So they were performing in other spaces before Mahan was created.
How old are the masqueraders?
There are two different ways to look at it. One is to mark it by the first performance date, which was in 1846.
Wow.
Second year of the Academy.
That is.
And it was called at that point the Spirit Club. They put on a show called The Lady of Lyon, and they performed out in the city of Annapolis with the intention of civilizing the city of Annapolis. But what was...
We're still trying after 175 years.
I thought, wow. And during their intermission, they felt so good about their performance. It was all midshipman run at that point, that they started popping champagne because... things were different then during mm-hmm. intermission, and got too tipsy to have a successful second act. So that was the first year of masqueraders, officially the theatrical activities, which continued, but sometimes couldn't continue because of what was happening in the world.
Right.
Sometimes they were banned because they had this reputation of getting out of hand sometimes. But then by 1907, they prevailed on the commandant to get the first official charter for being an ECA at the Naval Academy.
Are there some famous grads who were masqueraders?
That's such a great question, and I should know the answer.
We
but
should look into that.
I don't know if I have any big names. I know that there are people who've continued in performance after getting out of the Navy.
Really?
But I can't off the top of my head give you any of those names right now.
I've been attending masquerader performances for probably 16 years. I've been here 16 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I still remember one of the early performances, Tabitha Gant, she was one of my students, and they were performing Into the Woods.
Okay.
And she was absolutely phenomenal. I remember speaking with Tabitha afterwards. I said, get out of the Navy now. Just go to Broadway. Just forget the Navy.
And I think that what's strange with masqueraders, I think that the Glee Club and masqueraders certainly were the same entity at one point.
Oh, that's right, because Into the Woods was a musical.
Yes,
that's
but
right.
At some point they split, and English department started housing the straight, we call it straight shows, meaning that they're not musicals.
Right.
And then the music, I think when the music department became the music department, then they took the musical.
But
we have overlap with students.
There was a play you did maybe about 14 years ago, and it was set in an Australian penal colony?
Yes.
What was that?
That was Our Country's Good, and we did that in 2007 for our centennial performance.
That was so powerful.
And it was just such a fun show. We chose that show because it's about that first penal colony and the attempts of the Royal Navy to try to create a sense of community. And truly, they did in 1787, Lieutenant Ralph Clark directed Farquhar's recruiting officer there in Sydney Cove with the intent of civilizing the convicts who were going to become the first citizens in that colony once they served their sentences. And so what I love about that is this energy between trying to civilize the convicts to create a community, and then the masqueraders coming along, the first actors at the Academy in 1846.
Everybody's trying to civilize
To civilize Annapolis. So there's a long history of intertwined performance and naval service, which is really curious.
Wow. Now, how long have you been working with the masqueraders?
And I came in 2002, so I've been here since then. I was hired to both teach in the English department as well as to run the masqueraders. And the masqueraders has a core curriculum component. Often the show that we perform typically in the fall semester coincides with what we're teaching in HEU 111, mm-hmm. which is a core course, the core English, plebe English course, where they're studying dramatic literature and short stories. So oftentimes people will study the script of the dramatic literature of the mm-hmm. fall play and then go attend it. But this year we're performing in spring because of COVID.
Did you have a previous background in performance art?
And I do. My background, my doctorate is actually in theater from Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And I always tell my plebes when it's time to choose their majors that it's okay to be wishy-washy, you know, that this is a hard choice. And my undergrad, I wavered back and forth between theater, psychology, and English, and then finally ended up with my degree in English with a minor in theater and a secondary teaching certificate for junior high and high school. Mm-hmm. And then I went to do my master's in theater, but then I fell in love with Native American literature, so I went for my doctorate in Native Lit, or in English, but specializing in Native American literature. But then I missed theater, so then I swapped back over to theater to do it. And so that swapping back and forth is exactly what allowed me to get a job teaching in an English department, teaching plebe English and Shakespeare and dramatic literature, but also running the Masqueraders.
Were you surprised at the artistic expressions by the midshipmen? And the reason I ask that is because the first, I started teaching here in 2005, and really the only exposure I had to what midshipmen were like in class was a movie called Patriot Games with Harrison Ford. And I was worried the first day of class. I said, you know, these midshipmen, I've seen Patriot Games. They're really smart. I don't know what I'm going to talk about for an hour, much less a semester. But you really get to see a different side. I know I did when I was the O-Rep for the pipes and drums, and see them on a day-to-day basis and the creativity they bring not only to those organizations but even to the classroom. Did any of that surprise you when you started working with them here?
Right.
Because the Naval Academy is a little different from Ohio State.
It did. It is. And I was really uncertain what to expect. I tell my students sometimes I'm terminally civilian. There is a lot that I don't understand even after being here for so long. And I did, after I was hired, I had the opportunity to come and see the Glee Club musical that spring. I was hired in January, but wasn't starting, mm-hmm. I wasn't hired, but I knew I had the job for the fall starting in January. So I came to see the musical, and that gave me a sense of the talent. But then, as I've worked with midshipmen on stage, I find it to be a tremendous amount of energy and creativity and imagination, and often talk to my colleagues who I graduated with and who went off to teach in regular civilian institutions mm-hmm. where they run theater departments, and they have problems getting sometimes their majors to show up for rehearsal, which is crazy to me. It's unheard of. Here, if people don't come to rehearsal, it's because we're having to negotiate some sort of table of priorities. But I feel as if participating, the students who come out for Masqueraders and who get involved, they're doing it because they need that. That's part of them. And it's the only space where, or it's a major space, I shouldn't say the only, but a major space where they can reconnect to themselves, that part of their creativity, to explore and grow that. And I sometimes joke that it feels like missionary work. It's like, this is necessary. and it's keeping spirits alive in that way. And I think that hunger and that need and that space is what makes Masqueraders, as well as the other performing arts opportunities here on the yard, so important to those who come here with that background and that need.
When you look at whether it's athletics and that one big Super Bowl game, or opera and Caruso, whose name is still known, is there one Masquerader performance that is really the standard in the culture of the Masqueraders, that there's still rumors about it? Like, we heard about the great performance of, you know, 1947.
Oh my goodness. I do think, and I think that they probably go by director to director. I know that David White, who directed, I think it went from David White for a decade to Anne-Marie Drew the next decade, and then I was hired. And during the era of David White, he created a performance called Kings, where they cut, and I think that at that point he was working with, I may get this terribly wrong, with Michael Jasperson, who was the director for 30 years, who passed that over to David. But they cut a lot of the scenes and monologues with Shakespeare's famous kings and constructed a performance that was just focused on those elements from the different scripts and wove them together in a very creative way. And Shakespeare Quarterly came and reviewed it. And the students who took part in that, including Mark Larrabee, who was both a masquerader and then came back and was a permanent military instructor in the English department before his retirement, as well as Masqueraders OREP, which was wonderful to have that history with him. He was a performer in that. And those who performed in that show spoke about how transformative it was for them. And I think that because everything is always cycling, with the students coming in and out every 4 years, there's often, I think, a show for each student who's been part of those 4 years. When we had our centennial performance in 2007, and Masqueraders has really awful records in terms of keeping up with our history, which we need to get better with, and I always thought, I'll do that, but there's just, it's difficult to find the time. But we tried to go through old lucky bags to find as many graduates as we could to reach out to invite them back to show. And the night that Our Country's Good opened, I came into Mahan, and there was an elderly gentleman in Mahan standing in there just waiting. And his name was Ace Botten, class of 1949. And I said, oh, hello, sir. What? And he said, I am the midshipman who uttered the line that got the only show in Masqueraders history canceled. And he was still angry in 2007 about what had happened. And so he had brought the program and pictures from rehearsals and performances to the theater to give to us, to share with us. And I had never heard that story until that moment. But apparently, they were performing Boy Meets Girl. I think it was his sophomore or junior year. And the closing line of the first half was, that's the cutest damn bastard I've ever seen, or something like that. So he uttered that line, and the superintendent's wife stood up. And that was taken as a sign that she was offended and that the show needed to be closed. So the next day, the commandant called all the masqueraders in and said, I want you to tear down the set. I want you to get rid of all the all the programs, any sign of this program. It never existed. You're done. And they, it hurt them terribly. They'd worked so hard on it, but he had confiscated his materials and held on to them and brought them. And I thought that was
such
a...
Do you still have those?
I do. I do. We should give them to the museum.
You know, what I can't ask formally for something, but if somebody wants to donate, absolutely.
That would be wonderful.
Oh, yeah, that's something like that. A story like that is phenomenal.
And what's so funny with that story is, to this day, as I learn more about it, there's no real sense of, was she real? There are two stories. Mm-hmm. Was she offended and she stood up because she heard the word bastard and was, or another element of that is other people say, well, she was informed that she had a phone call that she needed to take, and she was waiting until intermission, and as soon as she knew it was time, she stood up to go take the, and was misread. So we still don't know in history why that show was exactly canceled.
You make the decision of what performances, right?
Yes.
What are the criteria that you look for when you offer a performance?
Since we're part of that core curriculum, I'm often thinking about what is teachable first, what would hold up in a 111 classroom. But I'm also thinking about if you're a masquerader and you're having 4 years in the program, what kind of experience are you getting? So I try to cycle a classic play with an avant-garde, or I shouldn't even say avant-garde at this point, but more experimental, non-mainstream style of theater, then a Shakespearean production. And then comedy I threw in as a fourth category within that four-year cycle, because I tend to choose darker plays. Even though Midsummer is not a dark play, it's a shift for me. But our other Shakespearean shows that we've done, the first one was Macbeth. The second one I directed was The Tempest, but I really wanted to look at the tensions and the cultural shifts and the aspect of colonization and power structures and that. So it was a darker Tempest. And then we did Titus Andronicus was our last Shakespearean production that I directed, and now Midsummer. So
it's incredible the impact that Shakespearean performances can have on people, or just Shakespeare in general. And Macbeth had a couple of, I don't want to say they were sequels, but there was Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Mm-hmm. But there was another one I saw downtown in D.C. just a few years ago, and it had implications for the Iraq War, and it was... Oh, shoot. I'll have to remember what that... I'll put it in the show notes. But basically, Lady Macbeth, it's what happens to her afterward.
Oh, I heard about that. I didn't see that production.
It was incredible. Then. Yeah, and I'm just blanking.
And there's also A Tempest, which is a... it's from Caliban's perspective, so it's flipping that. So there's so many different ways to take those strings and explore them.
It must be pretty tough also to select the midshipmen for this.
It is.
Because this is Shakespeare is not easy.
It's not. The good thing about Shakespeare is that the casts tend to be large. So I often think about, this is a time to bring in new blood because there are so many roles if you decide not to double cast, which we're not with the show. So we've got 24, 25 roles. And you can always throw in extras, too, if you want, because there are always court scenes and battle scenes. And I'm throwing my daughter in as an extra fairy this year because she's been on, you know, rehearsal time. And I figured, well, might as well use her. But for casting, I'm always surprised by the talent that comes out, even after, often, when somebody is a senior, like Alan, I've been working with them for 4 years, and I think, oh my gosh, I'm losing this lovely, deep voice and this complicated presence that's able to go into all of these different nooks and crannies. I'll never have a performer like that again show up. But then people always do. So it's funny how there's so much talent within the brigade that even when I worry that we're losing strong performers, which we do every year, there's always a surprising new energy that shows up with the next class who comes out to audition.
And I know we heard from two of those midshipmen, Tierra Sterling and Alan Sand, earlier. Should we hear from a couple more?
I think we should.
All right. And we're back with two more midshipmen performing A Midsummer Night's Dream. Our first guest is midshipman Al... No, it's not Al. I had Alan Sand just here. That's why I was thinking Sanders. It's Rob Saunders. Rob, welcome to Preble Hall.
Thank you.
It's probably the first time. Is this the first time you've been here to the museum?
Aside from Pleep Summer, yes, sir.
All right. Where are you from?
Beaumont, Texas.
What are you majoring in?
English. I mean.
Excellent. Excellent major. Why did you join the Masqueraders?
Well, I've always been very into acting. I acted in high school. And last year I wasn't too sure about the Masqueraders, but then I came and I saw some of the performances and I was like, oh yeah, this is it. So this year I was like, let me at least try. And I'm happy that I did.
What's the character you play in Midsummer Night's Dream?
I'm playing Lysander.
Tell us about Lysander.
So Lysander is in love with Hermia at the beginning of the play. But he is not able to marry Hermia because Hermia's father is not a fan of Lysander. So then Lysander comes up with an idea where basically Hermia and himself are going to run away to the woods to be married. But whenever we get there, a lot of complicated things happen, basically. And spoiler alert, Lysander gets... under a spell that makes him fall in love with Hermia's best friend. And so there's a lot of drama there.
Okay. Good. That good drama is good in a play.
Yes.
And a midshipman, Olivia Hunt. Olivia, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Where are you from?
I'm from London, England.
Excellent. Yes. What are you doing here? London's a great city.
I know.
It's civilized, unlike what we've learned about Annapolis. Yeah.
But yeah, I am American. I just was there for my mom's job. So yeah. Happy to be back in the States.
But it's a great city.
Oh, yeah.
I lived there for a little bit. Are you majoring in English as well?
I'm majoring in quantitative economics.
Holy smokes. Yeah. Smart midshipmen. I don't know what I'm doing here. Good thing I'm leaving. Tell us about your role.
I play Hermia in the play. So similar to the Lysander situation that Rob explained, I love Lysander, but my father wants me to marry Demetrius. And then we steal away in the night to go to the woods. And then through magic and like Puck's involvement, we have our love divided. And then I look for him and get lost. And then we get in some fights. And then hopefully it gets resolved. You'll have to come to the play to find out.
Are you looking forward to performing out in the open on the grass for the first time?
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to do theater in the round. I once did theater in like a thrust, which is like a square. But doing stuff outside is just really interesting. Like, I've always loved Shakespeare outside in the round and things.
Yeah, I did theater in the round once. It was Jacques Brel is alive and well and living in Paris. And it's just the four of us and singing. And it's a different dynamic when the crowd is right around you rather than, you know, normal circumstances. Do you want to start performing the scene? Or do you want to describe it briefly?
Oh, yes. So Hermia's monologue is right now Theseus, who's like the Duke of Athens, has asked her for her opinion on who she should marry for her voice a little bit. But again, there's parameters to that. And so she's just sort of pleading her case. I do entreat your grace to pardon me. I know not by what power I am made bold, nor how it may concern my modesty in such a presence here to plead my thoughts. But I beseech your grace that I may know the worst that may befall me in this case if I refuse to wed Demetrius. And then he then says that he wants me to either die the death or to abjure forever the society of men. So he says you can either die, marry Demetrius like your father wants, or because of Hippolyta, or you could be a nun. So not great options. And he does end by saying, that which withering on the virgin thorn grows, lives, and dies in single blessedness. And Hermia responds with, so will I grow, so live, so die, my lord, ere I will yield my virgin patent up unto his lordship, whose unwished yoke my soul consents not to give sovereignty. Yeah, so that is the bit of the scene.
And Midshipman Saunders, what are you going to read for us?
So I'm going to be reading a monologue from Lysander, and basically Lysander's been watching all of this happen. He saw Hermia basically just perform, or not perform, but like react in that way. And basically this is just where he's coming in and saying, I'm just as good, I can marry Hermia as well. So here it goes. I am, my lord, as well derived as he. As well possessed, my love is more than his. My fortune's every way as fairly ranked, if not with vantage, as Demetrius's. And which is more than all these boasts can be? I am beloved of beauteous Hermia. Why should not I then prosecute my right? Demetrius, I'll avouch it to his head, made love to Nadir's daughter Helena, and won her soul. And she, sweet lady, dotes, devoutly dotes, dotes in idolatry upon this spotted and inconstant man.
What's the next reading?
So this next one is basically after everyone leaves, and it's just Lysander and Hermia on the stage. And Lysander sees Hermia and tries to console her. So, how now, my love? Why is your cheek so pale? How chance the roses there do fade so fast?
Belike for want of rain, which I could well beteem from the tempest of my eyes.
Ay me, for aught that I could ever read, could ever hear by tale or history, the course of true love never did run smooth, but either it was different in blood.
Oh, cross too high to be enthralled too low.
Or else misgraft in respect of years.
Oh, spite too old to be engaged too young.
Or else it stood upon the choice of friends.
Oh, hell to choose love by another's eyes.
Or if there were a sympathy and choice, war, death, or sickness did lay siege to it, making it momentary as a sound, swift as a shadow, short as any dream.
If then true lovers have been ever crossed, it stands as an edict in destiny. Let us teach our trial patience, for it is a customary cross as true to love as thoughts and dreams and sighs.
A good persuasion. Therefore, hear me, Hermia. I have a widow aunt, a dowager. From Athens is her house, remote 7 leagues, and she respects me as her only son. There, gentle Hermia, may I marry thee. And to that place the sharp Athenian law cannot pursue us. If thou lovest me, steal forth from thy father's house tomorrow night, and in the wood, a league without the town, where I did meet thee once with Hermia, to do observance the morn of May, will I stay for thee.
My good Lysander, I swear to thee, by Cupid's strongest bow, by his best arrow with the golden head, by all the vows that ever men have broke, in number more than ever woman spoke, in that same place thou hast appointed me, tomorrow truly shall I meet with thee.
Keep promise, love. Look, here comes Helena.
All right, one more scene. What are you going to perform?
So at this point, we're in the woods, and we're under, or I'm under the love potion that made me fall in love with Hermia's best friend, Helena. And Hermia has been looking for me as I was pursuing Helena. And so basically, this is where she finds me, and I'm telling her that I don't love her. What? Should I hurt her? Strike her? Kill her dead? Although I hate her, I'll not harm her so.
What? Can you do me greater harm than hate me? Wherefore, oh me, what news is this, my love? Am I not Hermia? Are you not Lysander? I am as fair now as I was erewhile. Why then, God forbid, you left me in earnest, shall I say?
Aye, by my life. Therefore, be out of hope, of question, of doubt. Be certain, nothing truer, 'tis no jest, that I do hate thee and love Helena.
Oh me, you juggler, you canker blossom, you thief of love, what, have you come by night and stolen my lover's heart from him?
Outstanding. To both of you and to the rest of the masqueraders, good luck this weekend. You are going to just knock it out of the park. Thank you very much for coming in and giving us this primer. And we're going to make sure we get this out tomorrow morning so more people hear and know about what you're going to be doing tomorrow night and Saturday, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And Christy, would you like to join me for the wrap-up? Sure. Christy, we've just heard 4 incredible performances by midshipmen, and there are so many more midshipmen that are involved in this. So yes. Now you know, this is an exponential growth of the awesomeness. As a professor, what goes on through your mind? You were sitting down here at the end of the table watching these midshipmen perform. What was going on in your mind?
I just have such joy and pride in them. They've worked so hard, and to see their emotions turn on a dime in sync with that difficult language, that they feel it through their bodies and they can convey it through their hearts and language is just, it's like, you know, being a parent and watching your kids. And so it's just such joy to watch them have that freedom and abandon with the language.
Good.
And this particular cast has just been through the ringer.
Well, it's been tough. Unlike probably almost any year except maybe 1918, the COVID circumstances, if, you know, listeners aren't aware, I mean, for most of the past 2 months at least, midshipmen have been cooped up in their rooms for 22 out of 24 hours a day. Yeah. And to be able to come charging out with these raw emotions, and maybe that's a great way for them to let off some steam is through all these emotions through the characters.
Right. We had cast the play, we had a week of rehearsals on our feet where we got to know each other. We did a couple of read-throughs. We did some read-throughs with movement. And then we had started blocking, which is, for those who don't know theater, it's being on your feet and trying to figure out where actors are going to be on stage as they perform their roles. We had blocked acts 1 and 2, most of 2, and then we had to go into isolation, or I can't remember the proper term for it, but everyone went to their Rom.
Yeah.
And so then we had a month of rehearsal where everybody was meeting on Google Hangouts, and I would get together with small scenes. I'm really blessed that we have a new hire, Professor Michael Wagner, who agreed to, he has a background in performance as well, and had agreed to serve as assistant director. So there were a couple of nights a week that we could run two simultaneous rehearsals at the same time with small groups. But for and we didn't know from week to week whether or not we were going to get out of ROM, when we could start blocking again. And so we were really just playing it by ear, having to readjust our rehearsal schedule weekly. And had a month of people acting from the navel up in their screens with one another. And that was very problematic in terms of we got behind on movement. People didn't know how to incorporate their bodies in the stage. And then once we did get together, we were rehearsing outstage in the parade field gazebo and in the parking garage, trying to find spaces where we could still be outside wearing masks, being safe. But we did not get permission to go to Rattel Hill, where we're performing, until a week ago.
Oh, wow.
A week and a half ago, I guess, now. And so that was very difficult to yeah. So we had a week to kind of get used to the script in their bodies again, and then another week to get to Rattel Hill and then try to rehearse. But then we had bad weather. So it's been... But I think that what's been... The saving grace is that I think you can tell from the energy from these midshipmen that they are not over-dedicated. You can never be over-dedicated, but they're so dedicated and so flexible and love this work so much that they've risen to the occasion at every moment.
That really shines through
and
with all of them.
I think that it's going to be a treat. We didn't know if it would actually happen, but it's going to happen tomorrow.
Good. Christina, obviously that this is a live performance, and a lot of our listeners, especially alumni, are from around the country. Are you going to record this?
We are going to have a live streamed performance. So at 7 p.m. Eastern time, both during our performances Friday and Saturday night, we will be live streaming the production at the same time. I'm very grateful to both MSC and Matt McMahon specifically for finding out how to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And he's working with the PAO office and using one of the Naval Academy's YouTube channels to stream it. So if people are interested in watching the performance live through the live stream, they can go on to the Masqueraders webpage or to the homepage for the Naval Academy and find that link and log in and watch the performance. So in some ways, we normally perform for two weekends, and because of ROM, what would have been our first weekend became our tech weekend. So we're only performing two performances. But in some ways, I think we'll still be able to reach a large audience because of the live stream.
Christy, I know we all at the museum have had a lot of support from alumni over the years. The Syndicate, which is composed of 11 classes. Mm-hmm. How about the Masqueraders? How are you funded?
Yes, so the Masqueraders is unusual in that we are box office generated. So what we take in from the main stage show rolls through and supports our other events throughout the years. But in the past few years, we've been very fortunate to receive generous gifts from alumni donors as well. And so for this year, typically we charge for tickets to attend Masqueraders performances. But because this year is just so topsy-turvy, we decided to have these performances be free and open to the public. And we're able to do that because of two generous donor groups. One is the Bryant Fund for the Creative and Performing Arts, and the other is the Brady Fund for Leadership Through the Humanities. So they had given us some gifts throughout the year, years, and we'd been holding on to those for something really special, and this performance is funded entirely by those gifts, and we are so grateful.
Great, thanks. Christy Stanlake, Professor, United States Naval Academy, Department of English. I was going to say history, sorry, Christy. Thank you very much for what you do for the midshipmen for now almost 20 years, 19 years. That's an important role you play for them, with them, and teaching them in a very different way. And that really just came through with each of the four midshipmen who were here with us today. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been such a blessing for me as well. It's a delight every day.
I hope we do this again. I think the English Department and Preble Hall have to work on some more projects together.
I think we should.
And for the listeners, thank you very much for joining us for another episode of Preble Hall Naval History Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave feedback on any of the platforms you're listening to this. Have a great day, and remember, hold fast. This too shall pass.
Preble Hall is in no way intended to reflect the official positions of the Department of the Navy or the Naval Academy.